Hey, this is Stephen Curry, and you're listening to Warrior Sound, the voice of Dub Nation.
The stories of the Warriors live here on Warrior Sound, streaming 24/7 with team news, interviews, features, and more. Also, subscribe to our official team podcast wherever you get your podcasts by searching Golden State Warriors for conversations with folks from in and around the organization. I'm Lawrence Scott, and thank you for listening into Warrior Sound, the voice of Dub Nation.
Warrior Sound, welcoming you and David Fotoki, Warriors Assistant Manager of Basketball Operations and GSW Ventures at DFotoki11 on Twitter and Instagram, Chicago area native, WashU standout, captain of his college team in St. Louis. After college, pro career in Spain, now the Warriors BB Ops team. We'll talk about it all. We're in the Warriors draft room, and we're getting ready for the 2020 NBA draft. Strange circumstances in the world of sports, and the NBA finishing a season in a bubble. So much to talk about this particular edition. We're going to talk with David about the double. That was the Warriors bubble that took place at Chase Center, and so much more. Kind of a recap of the NBA playoffs as well. David, thank you so much for being part of things, and really so glad that we are tipping things off here together.
Hey, Lawrence, how's it going? Appreciate the glowing intro there.
I'm excited
to be here talking. Our first official locker room show. So I'm really glad that you had me on.
Help me out here with the double itself. This was a situation where there were eight teams that were not part of the finish of the regular season, and then the playoffs in Orlando at the Walt Disney World Resort, where the NBA did conclude an NBA Finals that we saw the Lakers crown. But the teams that didn't go to Orlando needed some on-court time, needed some bonding opportunities. Kind of help us understand what that time period was, how long it lasted, and what was actually accomplished during the double.
Yeah, I think the double was great for us. Kind of like you said, we had been off since March when the whole world shut down. And then obviously in San Francisco, we had some pretty tight rules around COVID-19 that actually helped us push past and bring the numbers down here. So we're very thankful for that. But none of our guys had been able to get together, really play 5-on-5 at all, up until that time. So that was there in early October, where late September, early October, where we got together. We got the opportunity to get our players here in a makeshift bubble in San Francisco, go through some practices, but really just get together and have fun together for, 2-3 weeks, play a little 5-on-5, do some more team bonding type activities. So I think that was huge for us.
Most certainly.
Being able to get together.
Yeah, and you think of what it all represented with our Warriors studio productions. We had a nice conversation that Warriors television play-by-play man Bob Fitzgerald did with Coach Kerr. And just to hear Coach Kerr's perspective of what camp represented is what we'll kind of start things out with here. We do see a lot of good folks off stage right now. People will be brought up. We'll have a lot of different conversations go on. But quickly, a little bit more of what David was talking about, the double represented, as Bob Fitzgerald and Coach Kerr kind of reviewed it after it all came together.
Steve, why don't we start with what were your anticipations coming into the mini camp, and then maybe reflect on how everything went from what you thought it would be to how it was executed?
We didn't really know what to expect. It was just given the state of the world these days. So we were in touch with our players, and obviously our organization was putting in so much work to try to put together the schedule. It couldn't have gone any better in terms of safety and health protocols. Everything was done really professionally, and everybody felt safe and secure the entire time. So that was the main thing. That was the number one priority. And then basketball-wise, I would say that went about as I expected. We didn't expect full participation, knowing that Steph and Draymond had family stuff they had to deal with. But given that, it was great to get everybody else in, and good to see Clay Clay looked really good, and our young guys got a lot of really good work in. So it was a very productive couple of weeks.
Yeah, David, the takeaway for me, perhaps, was the concept that Clay Thompson's back out on the court in meaningful action, not just participating with the guys, but taking part in things in a way that shows us the future is very bright for the Warriors with number 11 shooting. Now, from one guy who wears 11 to another guy, DFatoki11 on Twitter and Instagram.
Yes, sir.
Just as we get rolling here, your involvement in knowing about locker room and hooking up with Howard and making this whole thing happen, just kind of tell us your story here. A Chicago area guy, some time at WashU playing in college, but the GSW venture side of things and your work in basketball operations, kind of knowing that this could be a cool venue for Warriors Talk. How did it all come together?
Yeah, so just kind of a little background. Graduated from WashU in St. Louis. It was a smaller D3 school, but for me, it was kind of that great intersection of academia and sports. So we had a lot of players who, you know, had some Ivy League D1 offers, but ended up, you know, coming to the D3 level, and we were a powerhouse kind of along there with, you know, Williams College, Amherst. Williams College is, you know, famously the school that Duncan Robinson went to before transferring to Michigan. So we had a pretty high level basketball there, you know, routinely in the top five. And I was lucky enough to have a really good senior season playing basketball. So then stepping into the corporate world, I decided to take a job in consulting, but then ended up playing basketball overseas in Spain. So that was kind of a little detour in my path before getting here to the Warriors. And now I've been here for starting my fifth season now. And then on behalf of Locker Room, I'd met Howard actually on a plane. I believe it was 2017, going to the MIT Sloan Sports Conference. And we just kept in touch through what he's been doing and, you know, throughout his building apps, creating things, you know, just being an innovator within the space. And we kept in touch. So when he kind of reached back out to me in January, February timeframe, as things were kind of shutting off, you know, this was just something that I gravitated to, you know, very early. Welcome Howard up to the stage. And as he mentioned in the comments there, yes, me and Kent Lakeup played college basketball together. So we just stayed connected, and now Locker Room is something I think that all sports fans, you know, team personnel to analysts to athletes themselves and sports fans, like we can all just come together here and kind of have that genuine, honest, you know, sports conversation that we all know and love.
So true. And Howard, you know, you think about the guests that we will have as we do these Warriors draft room shows leading up to the draft. And then, you know, as basketball begins, there's so many opportunities to be portable with this and go different places. When you met David, Howard, you know, you must have thought this guy has it together. He's part of this great organization, and the friendship that you guys have had, how has that grown as you guys have worked together to make sure that we're all here in this room on what's the maiden voyage, the inaugural show for Locker Room with the Warriors?
I mean, it's been a pleasure to get to know David as a friend, and it's one of the beautiful and rare things in life when you meet someone that you can hang out with as a friend and, you know, have situations in which work can overlap and sort of be enhanced by the friendship. And this was like a very rare case. I mean, we met each other because we were both flying to the MIT Sloan Sports Conference, you know, which is something that's in our industry, became friends there. And I think we both knew that maybe one day we'd get a chance to work together, but had no idea that Locker Room would even happen. And then it did, and here we are. And I think it's cool. You know, Warriors fans will get a chance to hear from their favorite voices because of that friendship.
Most certainly. You know, part of what we are focusing on right now is the future with what is going to be a Warriors team that currently heading into the NBA draft. The Warriors have secured the second pick. Course, everyone excited about what that could represent in a variety of ways. And then there's guys that are coming back into the fold, like Leandro Barbosa joining the coaching staff with Coach Kerr and Sean Livingston being part of basketball operations. Some of what we'll do here in our Warriors locker room shows are bring out some of the features that we have with Warriors Sound. We stream 24/7 at warriors.com/sound, and these programs will also be a part of that. But we also do these Warriors remix segments, and one with Sean Livingston was a really special one I want to tap into for just a second, because it's part of a conversation we'll have about how the Warriors keep projecting excellence that we've had in the recent past into the future. Here's a topic that we really love, Sean, in the community and in his hometown of Peoria, Illinois.
This Warriors remix, a return to the 2016-17 championship season. During the Warriors' first road trip of the season facing teams from the East, guard Sean Livingston returned to his hometown of Peoria, Illinois between games in Milwaukee and Indiana for a special dedication ceremony. Sean's $1 million donation to Concordia Lutheran School, where he attended from kindergarten to eighth grade, was a gift that enabled the expansion and renovation of a gymnasium full of features to serve as host for games, school performances, and assemblies.
That's what it's about, you know, continuing to give back, you know, continuing to give. I've been fortunate, I've been blessed, and, you know, now my goal is to continue to try to bless others and help others and hopefully, you know, inspire others.
With this Warriors remix, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Yeah, I don't think there's a more centered, more cool, more chill guy in the history of the NBA than Sean Livingston. I mean, he's just the embodiment of cool, a super nice person. And now, David, in basketball operations, you'll have a chance to work with him hand in hand on a day-to-day basis. What are some of the things that you think are going to come from that relationship?
Yeah, so that relationship has already started. As you guys can imagine, we've been doing a ton of draft interviews over this time, all virtual on Ring Central. And Sean kind of entered in as a part of those in early September when his position was announced. So he's just kind of been a blessing, especially in those draft interviews. Obviously, we have our scouting staff, myself included, who's gone out and seen all these players, seen all the games. But now including, you know, Mike Dunleavy, who's an assistant GM for us, you have, you know, Zaza Pachulia on some of these calls. And then you have Sean Livingston on the calls. And for a lot of the draft prospects, when they step into that virtual draft room and they see, you know, Sean Livingston on there, they understand, you know, how serious we take all of our draft interviews. And then also the type of culture that we have coming from him, being able to speak to both, you know, playing and now also being on the front office side and how we do things. He's just going to be a huge part of our front office moving forward.
Most certainly. Now, we're also setting the table for what we'll be doing here with our shows on Locker Room. And one of the guys that we've known for quite some time because of his great work with Bleacher Report and covering the Warriors and the NBA is Will Gottlieb, joining now with Locker Room to make sure that the conversations are flowing. And Will, help share with us some of the vision for what's to come here with not just the shows that we're planning to do that are Warrior-centric, but also how the NBA will be covered and really world sport and other topics will be part of the mix on Locker Room.
Well, thanks, Lawrence, for inviting me up. Yeah, I think, obviously very excited to have you guys on here talking about some of your draft process and just moving forward, what it looks like to be in the front office. I think that gives some of our fans here some really unique insight into what it means to work for an NBA team and one of their favorite NBA teams. So, really excited about that. I think more broadly speaking, we just want to be a place where fans can come and talk about sports. So if you are on your lunch break during the middle of the day and you saw that Daryl Morey just got hired by the 76ers and you want to talk about it or listen to other fans talk about it, you can come do that. And there are a million examples of ways you can do that, whether it's World Series last night or Zaza Pachulia coming on. I think we just offer a ton of ways to meet people as a social platform, learn about, you know, what other teams are doing and how other fans are thinking about those teams. So we're really excited to just become a place, a social media platform that people can come learn, talk, debate, and all of it.
Very cool. Kent Lakup will be our featured guest on Monday's show, but we're really happy to be here just a day after the launch, Will. And when you think of this space and how conversations are now taking part in not just sports, but really all of these other types of culture that can be explored here. I mean, I guess what I love about what we're about to embark upon is that it takes a more relaxed take. And you know, as you hear with the soundboard that we're bringing in with our Warriors Sound channel with this, we want to keep people informed as to some of the things that we're talking about. One thing that we'll have to be mindful of as we do our Warriors draft shows is that coming from the team, we really are not in a position to discuss prospects by name, yet we can talk about the process that the Warriors have been taking part in with evaluating draft prospects in a time period that is a challenge because we didn't finish a college basketball season. And this is really upside down. It is interesting to think of players that were playing overseas, David. And when you think of the process of what it is to evaluate prospects in this time frame, the COVID era, this was some challenges, but could there have been a silver lining to some of this, a different kind of analysis of who the prospects are, a drilling deeper in some other way that offered a unique perspective that if it was business as usual, you might not have had otherwise? What's that been?
Yeah, I think so for sure. We typically do a great job in getting out on the road scouting throughout the season, you know, starting with practices in October throughout March Madness. So we feel like we did a lot of in-person work with our scouting team throughout the year. So when COVID kind of shut everything down, obviously we hated to miss some of those conference tournaments and NCAA tournaments, which hold a lot of weight when you're evaluating prospects. But we think we did a lot of our due diligence very early, and we were excited and kind of glad about that. But also on that second end, I think this was a huge silver lining, just being able to get a little more time to evaluate the decision and really try to figure out what we have and what we're looking for. I think a big thing that came out of this was just doing a little bit better of a deep dive on each individual prospect and obviously, you know, more prospects. Typically, when we do draft interviews, we're confined to a smaller group and a shortened time slot. And then also it's all in person in Chicago at the Combine, where, you know, a prospect and us, for example, might do 5-6 interviews in a day. And I know you guys working from home, like you've seen it, to be in a meeting for 4 hours in a row, like it kind of gets it kind of wears you down at the end when you get to like the 2-3 hour mark. So kind of just being able to spread those interviews out is one thing, but also being able to have different personnel in each interview and really, you know, have different people lead interviews, have different people interject in interviews. It just gave us, you know, the ability to have a more well-rounded approach and really dive deeper and deeper, get that intel that we all covet in order to make, you know, the best decision come November 18th.
Yeah, and two, we don't want to, you know, drill it too deep into the ground, but thank you for understanding why we're in a position where we can't exactly speak by name about different draft prospects. And a big thank you to the discussion tab at the bottom of the screen here on Locker Room, which gave us the opportunity to look into a very nice hashtag message from Andrew Jones saying, "Don't want to get you in trouble." So, Andrew, thank you for that, and thank you for understanding. David, we'll be back in 2 seconds here to talk more about the NBA playoffs and what we saw and really the competition that we'll be seeing in the years to come in the Western Conference, especially as the other teams that showed out in the bubble in Orlando are of note. But our double included a conversation with Coach Kerr that we heard from Warriors TV broadcaster Bob Fitzgerald, where they talked about some of the players that really stood out at our training camp that wrapped up not too long ago. This a conversation about one Kevon Looney.
It was great for me to see Kevon Looney running around, you know, in terms of, and to hear Kevon say physically he felt as good as he has maybe in a couple years and things like that. Give me a little thought on Kevon Looney.
Well, to me, it's the best story to come out of camp. Because Loon went through an awful lot last year, just in terms of his health and the uncertainty around what was bothering him. He had a surgery a few months ago, an abdominal surgery that seems to have really helped him take the next step. And Loon has been in here every day working with Rick Celebrini, and it paid off. He spent the last 2 weeks without a hitch, going through every drill, every scrimmage. He's playing pickup ball today. He hasn't missed a day. So he feels great. He looks great. And given that he is a key component of what has been a championship team, that's the number one story, the number one positive thing that came out of this camp is we feel really good about Loon's ability to be healthy and to be a valuable center for us on this coming year's team.
Yeah, that's great to hear from Coach Kerr directly that he considers Kevon Looney's progress at the training camp to be the best story to come out of it, and a lot of good stories, including seeing Klay Thompson back on the court. But, you know, you think about Kevon Looney, David, and, you know, just the little things he does and just how he knows how to play the game. It's so great. I mean, just seeing him also as a person was really cool. We were there in Milwaukee where they retired his jersey at his high school in Milwaukee. And, you know, just always a guy with a quick smile. And on the court, his demeanor is very, very focused. But from what you got to see at the training camp, what was it to see Kevon back on the court and excelling? What did you notice?
Yeah, it was big. Loon, obviously, it's no secret how much we love Loon and what he brings to our organization. Like you said, on and off the court. Obviously, his IQ is top notch, and he's clearly time and time again, you know, proved to us in the playoffs that when the biggest stage comes around, he's a guy that knows what he's doing and can handle the situation with, you know, at the highest level. So just seeing him back out there, obviously, you just want him to be healthy at the end of the day, and kind of seeing him being able to get up and down the court, to scrimmage 5-on-5. You know, you can see it being in the facility, especially during the season. You know, we see him in there every day, putting in work with the training staff and the performance staff. So it obviously it always hurts when you see, you know, players who are giving it their all but can't physically be out there. So kind of like you said, just seeing him there and being able to get back into the action and do what he loves. That's, you know, the most grateful thing, and the thing that we take away and we love to see the most.
You know, let's talk NBA playoffs and what wrapped up. And of course, the Lakers winning the title this time around. And, you know, some of it was strange to watch, to be completely honest, just because there was no fans in the building, but the virtual fans came through, and that added a nice element to it because it felt like there was some presence there. The game operations was also really cool when you saw how they were able to blend sound and images that you would have in the given home arenas as part of what was happening there in Orlando, but just on the court. And we'll bring both Will and Howard back here in a second. We'll start with you, though, David, with surprises from the playoffs. I mean, for me, I'll start off by saying I was surprised that Denver had the wherewithal that they did. I mean, the thing that we've seen from Denver teams is that they're well-coached, it's a smart team. There's a lot of talent, obviously, with Jokic and Jamal Murray. But, like, the grit that they displayed, that was a sign that, okay, you know, we know they're a talented young team, but this is a team that probably will have some staying power because of some of what they showed and coming back in those series. What also stood out to you during the playoffs, as I bring Howard and Will back in so that they can give their takes on what they saw and kind of will always remember from this particular NBA playoffs. But David, take it away.
Yeah, I think for me, it was that Miami Heat team. I think kind of in the times that we are now with the high level regular season basketball and all the scoring and all the top level players, we kind of forget a little about how, you know, the cohesiveness of a team and the way that pieces fit together while they're out there as a five-man unit and not necessarily a one-man or two-man show, how much that really matters. So when you watch that Heat team and it just gave me, you know, I reminisced a little bit about how the early Dubs teams were when you're looking at, you know, 2014, 2015 coming into our own. Like, you just love to see those players growing together, playing for each other, giving, you know, their heart on the court and figuring out how they can, you know, make the next person better. That's just so fun for me to watch and to see. So I think that was the biggest takeaway. And I hope, you know, as we go forward, I think you'll see teams have kind of earmarked that that Heat team as kind of like a model along with us on how you try to build and get a cohesive unit playing together.
Howard, your takeaways from the most recent NBA playoffs, what will you always remember about this particular bubble playoffs, man, in Orlando?
It was a crazy bubble. I think on the court, from a basketball perspective, the thing that sticks with me is sort of the flip side of what David's talking about is my Celtics. I was disappointed to see them not find true cohesion and sort of like make the leap. And I felt that the way they went out was kind of weak. I hope that they can figure things out and like put together a deep run next season, but I don't think it's possible. And so, or I don't think it's likely. And so it's got me thinking about what it would look like for them to move off some of my favorite players, which is pretty sad, but I'll always remember that. Was a big fan of the Heat run, though, I have to say. And Lawrence, I have to say, I see some Dubs fans in the crowd, so you might want to bring some of them up too.
Yeah, most certainly. And a nice discussion to be had. Let's give Will his weigh in on the absolute ending that was, you know, yeah, the Lakers taking the title, but unusual circumstances, still a lot of memories about this bubble in Orlando. What will be always with you, Will?
Well, I think I'm pretty in line with David here on this one. Being a fellow Chicagoan, to see Jimmy Butler reach the heights that he did as an individual and obviously with that Miami Heat team was really fun for me to watch and just kind of reminisce about, you know, how he played for my Bulls. But also, like David was saying, I think we reached this point where we're at such a level of coaching with, you know, I know it didn't, you know, finish quite as well as you would have hoped, Howard, but Brad Stevens, Nick Nurse, you know, Eric Spoelstra, Vogel was fantastic. I just think we're at such a great place in the NBA right now where we have some of these teams playing incredible basketball, kind of greater than the sum of their parts, and moving away, I think, a little bit from that model of having one player who does everything and then just kicks it out to three-point shooters. But now we're seeing more movement and more operation from the elbows. And I think it's just a really aesthetically pleasing style of play. And I think the Warriors certainly set the curve with that. And I'm excited to see Kerr, who obviously fits into that category, and the rest of that Warriors team come back next season.
All right. Now, to bring folks up, we should use the discussion tab as the place where we can sort of kind of get the idea of what the discussion will be. Just asked Stephen Cameron to step up, but he wasn't available at this very moment. But he did write a question in, and he was saying that his connection isn't strong enough right now for him to feel confident in the audio. And Stephen, we completely understand that. But the question that he had posed toward David, and let's just bring this one in via the chat here, is, David, what are the largest challenges when evaluating a player via video chat versus in person?
I think the biggest challenge is not being able to feel the presence of that player having on the game. Like, you can see it a little bit, but, you know, if you guys have ever been to a big time game or, you know, sat a little closer to the floor, you can just feel the type of presence that, that someone exudes and kind of brings off, like, to his teammates, but also to the opposing team. And I think that definitely matters for a prospect. So I would say that's the one thing. The film has gotten so good that you can see kind of those little things on how they're interacting with teammates, how they, you know, talk to the referees. Those used to be issues when you were watching on film, but I think now those are good. But the biggest thing for me is just kind of feeling that presence that the player exudes when you're like right there just in the moment.
Okay, now we're reaching out to Dub Nation to discuss some of what the future has in store, and Yemi joins us. How are things going?
It's going well. Can you hear me?
Totally can hear you.
Wait, time out. We got to get my dad off stage here.
here he is. He's on stage. You asked a very good question in our discussion section and asking really what will a season coming still in the midst of a pandemic possibly look like. And as we understand it, David, and help me explain this a little bit better, the Board of Governors meets and now quite regularly to try to iron out how things will look moving forward. We don't know an exact time frame and really couldn't say so at this moment, but the plan is obviously to eventually be able to have fans back into buildings and games played in a way that it reduces travel. How many fans? Maybe it's kind of like what we're seeing in some parts of world soccer where there are, you know, and even the NFL, to be quite honest, the pod, the family pod area or something like that. But what are some of the things that are some of the challenges that we're looking at that, Yemi, if you even ask the question out loud right now, like you did in the chat, what are some of the things you're thinking about as the Warriors prepare for a future ahead?
Just curious, sorry, David, as to what the NBA and the Warriors plan to do. You know, I must commend the NBA for taking the lead and also being safe and following the scientific advice when it comes to this COVID. And I know the season was cut short, so I'm trying to see or just get a feel for what next season will be like. You know, I know you're going through the draft now and also preparing for next season. How will things change from the bubble to what we are used to seeing in the NBA?
Yeah, and full disclosure, my dad's trying to figure out when he can plan a trip to San Francisco to come to a game. But I think, yeah, it's just so tough for the NBA. I think obviously most teams, including ourselves, like we want to try as hard as we can to get fans in the building. Like we all love the bubble, but we understand that that can't be a model, you know, for the long-term future. So obviously the goal is always to try to get fans coming back into the building, and we're working towards that. I think the biggest limitation and kind of the biggest piece of uncertainty are the individual markets. So there might be, I mean, you're kind of seeing it with the NFL now, but there may be one city that allows 5,000 people in a venue, and then there's another city that only allows, you know, 500 people. So how do you come to a consensus mark where each NBA team kind of has a similar amount of fans in the building or can't even get fans in the building? And I think that's kind of the biggest uncertainty part moving forward that we're hoping to get some clarity on in the future.
Dub Nation, certainly well represented on this program as we get things going with our locker room shows. And thank you, Yemi. Now to a man who's got a great question, a good friend of the program, Taba. And I've got to ask you here, you asked the question about the elements from the virtual draft process. Hit David straight up with what the big question is right now as we look to take from what we've seen happen in this given instance, perhaps into the future for maybe other reasons that are not pandemic related. Maybe something has come from making this a good process. Mataba, what was your question?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Lawrence. I think when you just look around, even outside of the sports industry, I think a lot of different sectors are shifting just because of the limitations placed on by COVID. So my question for David was, what are some elements that you see kind of sticking around long term when it comes specifically to the basketball world, so pre-draft?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, the video interviewing worked. It worked really well, in my opinion. I kind of mentioned it, but as you guys offstage can imagine, like it's when you're interviewing a prospect or when you're interviewing anyone, it's hard to have, you know, 20 people in a room. So because that's the case, you know, a lot of times in the NBA in the past, you've had the same 5-6 people interviewing every single prospect. And that's the only perspective that you have, where I think these video interviews has allowed us to put together different pods of staff members that can go in and interview a prospect. And in my opinion, that's allowed us to get, you know, much better sense of how the prospects are, you know, as we're diving into character, we're diving into just what we think of them, and we're trying to get to know them a little more. That allows us to get a little different group in front of them. And then obviously with virtual interviews, you can kind of hit a few more touch points and maybe do one interview, two interviews, three interviews, depending on who that player is. So I think the virtual interviews are definitely here to stay for sure.
So, you know, you had this experience after your time at Wash U of personally playing some professional basketball in Spain. And I mean, I'm sure back, wasn't that long ago, really, just a matter of years ago, you probably were communicating with family and friends on Skype and staying in touch, you know, with the way that people now are doing Zoom so often as a way to stay in touch. But being present in a virtual sense, like you, I'm sure, did when you were playing in Spain, are there ways to really gauge personalities and the way that people engage in these online situations, or does some of that have to be taken into account as well?
I definitely think that that some of the in-person stuff is very, very necessary. You have to be able to, and it's the same thing with scouting a guy in person. You have to be able to feel their presence in front of you. I think you get something from that. So I do think it'll be a mix in the future of the virtual and the in-person stuff. But the virtual kind of for a baseline, I think worked extremely well this year. And I think a lot of teams will continue doing it moving forward.
Take us a little bit inside now, because as we have Kent Lacob join us on Monday, we'll start getting a little bit deeper into the process of how the Warriors have evaluated prospects, but how is it divided up? Like, what are some of the key tasks that are really necessary to do the proper evaluation work, and how has the organization from the basketball operations side divided up sort of the workload so that everybody has eyes on the full playing field?
Yeah, I think we have what you would call a smaller scouting staff, but that's because everyone in our basketball operations front office department, you know, from Bob to the lowest person, has scouting responsibilities. So while we have a couple full-time scouts who I would say are on the road during the college basketball season, maybe 75 to 80% of the time, like those are the scouts you hear about who are hitting, you know, five college basketball games in a week period. There's other people like myself who will fit in around the schedule and go see, you know, one to two games a week, depending on, you know, where I am at that time and what I can fit within my schedule. And I think that's big. Some of the duties that come along, like obviously you have a lot of the film work where we lean on a lot of people from, you know, myself to Santa Cruz video personnel, Golden State video personnel to create these clippings and to pull video for all of our scouts to watch. You have everything that goes into physically getting your scouts there. And that's a lot of the logistics and operations that we have great people who help us with. Shout out to Chloe Walkup, who's huge within our scouting department for getting all that taken care of. And then, you know, I think a lot of it is just kind of that cohesiveness with each other. Obviously, we have a full team that has the analytical side of it as well. That's Pabel, our director of innovation and strategy, his team that provides us information on who we should go see, kind of where some outliers might be throughout the college season that we need to get eyes on. So there's a lot of things that kind of go into the process of getting everybody to games and figuring out what guys we need to make sure we get eyes on.
Yeah, and the draft matters, because think back to a certain draft where you've got a guy in 2009 that the Minnesota Timberwolves passed over twice. Ricky Rubio from Spain, where you played some of your professional basketball, mm-hmm. you know, taken. Then Johnny Flynn from Syracuse. And, you know, folks like to make that comparison and knock on Johnny Flynn. I mean, the truth was he did get injured, and, you know, he was a dynamic star in college. And you knew, though, when you were watching a certain guy from Davidson College, that this was a unique talent. And Sasha, you made a great point in our discussion, Tab, that you just saw something where it was now on this date in NBA history that a certain number 30 made his NBA debut. Do you remember that? And goodness gracious, take us through your favorite Steph moments, because you brought to the fore that the rest was history. Sasha, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really remember it. I'm a 2000 kid, so I was only 9 years old then. But it's definitely something to look back at, because he's a special talent, and we saw it in college. But, you know, no one knew that Steph was going to develop into the player that he is today. Like, he is literally the epitome of greatness over the past, you know, 5-6 years. And just seeing his growth from this young kid at Davidson who wills his team to the NCAA tournament to now he's like one of the biggest superstars that the NBA has ever seen and has changed the game in such a fashion that we couldn't even imagine. You know, it's really, there's a lot of moments. I just remember so many different shots that he took from past half court that I was amazed by watching on SportsCenter highlights. And, you know, just watching Steph's development also just takes me back to when I first started liking basketball. So that's why I always make.
Yeah, no, for me, the double bang in Oklahoma City is called by Mike Breen. That shot was just like, just you'll never, ever forget that. And then really the corner three in game three of the first round of the playoffs in 2015, the Mo Spates dish over to Steph. I mean, so clutch and then instrumental in finishing the sweep in what was the game four against the Pelicans. But those are those shots that you're just like, okay, this is magic, and we'd love to see it. Sasha, where are you coming to us from? Where are you joining us from?
Right now, I'm in my room in Rochester, New York. I'm at home because I couldn't go to school this semester. I usually go to Stony Brook. But, yeah, tuning in, really loving this locker room app, and it's a huge first broadcast for the Warriors draft.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and bringing the question to the discussion tab, which then made us bring this conversation to the fore. Very, very nice of you to remind us that, yes, NBA history made on this day with Steph making his debut on, gosh, can you believe? I mean, I guess the other bittersweet thing about it is you were talking about the 28th of October and we're waiting for another season. But, Sasha, thank you so much for joining us. And Mark Newhan, in the comment section, adding Steph crossing up CP3, and goodness gracious. I mean, that thing, you remember the video of it, Coach Kerr was going, no, what, and then, you know, the shot went just fine. David, your favorite Steph moments as we reflect on the greatness and a historic day that Sasha brought to us.
Man, you kind of hit it. There was that three over Anthony Davis in the playoffs where he got fouled. That was definitely one. I think my first real big live Steph moment was 2015. I want to say it was a conference semifinals when we played the Grizzlies. And I was there when he hit, I believe that's the year he hit the three-quarter court shot. You know, I think it was game three or game four. And so that's probably my favorite Steph moment, because that's like I believe that was the year we won the championship. So that was kind of like the entrance of, all right, we know who he is, but this guy is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, most certainly. You know, one of the cool things too about locker room here, and I'm noticing it with people's profiles. I mean, I'm pretty diehard blue and gold, you know, and that's my favorite team that's sitting there in the channel. But I did notice, David, as you were coming on, you have some Cubs fandom, and, you know, we just saw the end of a World Series. That game that the Rays won 2 games ago was probably the most memorable thing to come from this World Series. But you got that chance to taste a Cubs World Series, and the only reason I'm even bothering you about this is, I mean, I know you're a Chicago area guy, but like, some people pick White Sox, some people pick Cubs, you know, it's like, it's a matter of what grabbed you, but you put the Cubs as the logo you have, as well as your Warriors logo here on the Warriors, not for the draft room part of it, but your profile on locker room. Being a Cubs fan, it certainly has its ups and downs.
It does. A lot of people give me some crap because I'm originally from the south suburbs of Chicago, so I'm closer to the White Sox and should theoretically be a White Sox fan. But when I got really into baseball growing up playing, it was, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. So that was the Kerry Wood, Mark Pryor, Sammy Sosa era. And that's what drew me to the Cubs. And I would say the only bad thing about me working for the Warriors, and this happened right at the beginning. So I was back in Chicago after playing professionally for the entire summer when we were making the run to the World Series. And I went to probably 12 to 15 games over that summer, Cubs games. And then I got my acceptance letter from the Warriors. I got the time that I was going to, that I needed to fly out to the Bay Area. And the Cubs, I believe we beat the Giants in the NLCS. And it was a week before I was leaving to come to the Bay Area. And then we made it to the World Series. And that was the week that I had flown and like I moved in into San Francisco. So I missed both parts of it. I didn't go to any of the Cubs Giants games in San Francisco. And then I was sitting in a bar in Santa Cruz by myself watching the Cubs win the World Series when I could have been there. So that's the one thing that I was saying for the Dubs. Like, really got me.
Well, okay. So you mentioned Santa Cruz. And before we go into Santa Cruz, I want to say about the very nice discussion note we got from Narendra. Thank you very much. That's nice of you to not only be listening, and thank you to everybody who've been writing in, but a very nice note from Narendra. And we're seeing some very cool conversations also coming in the discussion tab. And Will, who joined us earlier in the show, Will Gottlieb, got to see both. So he did get you there. But David, help us with Santa Cruz and how you started in the Warriors organization with the Santa Cruz Warriors, and how so many folks within the organization have had some realm where, I mean, I help sometimes with some of the commercials for the Santa Cruz Warriors games when they're coming to what was, you know, the games at Oracle Arena and the most recent one at Chase Center, and Chris Murphy, the president there, you know, a great colleague. And I love always our ability to help support what Santa Cruz Warriors are doing, because having the team so close and not being the Dakota Wizards is so great when it comes to the players having the on-court time and being able to get back and forth for, you know, the examples like we've seen with some of the younger players, why it's necessary. But for you personally and how you've seen it work, why has this G League affiliate being, you know, the edge of the Central Coast, basically in the Bay Area, so instrumental to the Warriors and what we do?
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it being so close. The Warriors really put a lot of resources into our G League program. It's truly one organization from the top down, and I'm extremely grateful for that. Lawrence, as you said, I started out in the G League for two seasons, but while I was in the G League, I was still a part of I was a part of the Warriors. So, you know, I got to be up while I was working for Santa Cruz. I got to be up for training camp. I got to spend time, you know, during those two playoff runs. Being up in practices, being up doing draft work throughout those years. So they really utilized me and utilized everyone down in Santa Cruz as a part of, you know, the Golden State Warriors organization. So I feel like that's been kind of the biggest thing for us. And like I said, I'm a little biased because I still do a lot of work with our Santa Cruz team, and that's what I focus on. I like to say I focus on roster spots 10 to 15, and then, you know, our two ways and our G League roster. So just having that continuity going up and down for the players, for the staff, for the front office personnel, that's like it's the best. And I think that helps us identify, you know, some of the guys that have made our team, but also some of the guys that you see across the league that we've been able to help transition from that, you know, Santa Cruz G League level to being on NBA rosters and having an impact.
That's one of the things that we want to do here, is make sure that the discussions that have taken part, and Rowan will be a part of this in just 2 seconds, David, and thank you for the heads up there. But Dylan, starting off our discussions, letting everybody know to let's go as the rally cry for our Warriors draft room, our inaugural show here. James Lauer mentioning how he loved the Zaza room last night. Robert Segura saying hello. Some very nice things from Narendra and Howard joining us. There's really some nice questions coming in from a variety of folks, and some thought-provoking stuff from Lauren Gunn, who you know, has posed something here that's a very interesting question. Also weighing in earlier on that about how she thinks that Dallas has next. And of course, you know, Luka Doncic was amazing during the playoffs and hashtag MFFL, I'm sure looming large in the gun household as we look forward to another season. But I wanted to bring Rowan up because we were talking about underrated Steph moments, and this one certainly near and dear to my heart because it was my first season with the team, and I used to sit down on the court, and this is before we could get highlights off of WSC or anything. I usually could sit down and shoot the game, like in a suit, Indian style, and I've just remember these things vividly from 2013, first round versus the Nuggets, and watching Steph's early excellence. Rowan, games 2 and 4, 2 would have been in Denver, 4 at Oracle Arena. Your memories of that and why you kind of consider those to be underrated Steph memories?
Yeah, for me, those were big as a fan because when we drafted Steph in 09, me and my brother, I was in high school, and we celebrated like crazy. And I immediately began talking massive trash to all my friends because I'd moved recently from the Bay Area to Southern California with a bunch of Laker fans. And I think like that 13 playoffs, I was like vindicated in my trash talk about how amazing Steph is. And it was, to me, it was really those really games 2, 3, and 4. He went on that a pretty crazy run, taking over that series against Denver. Those are ones that like I weirdly go back and watch because with me and my older brother, it's like a bonding thing, some of those. And game 4 is where at the end of, I think it's the one where in the fourth, Steph dropped like 20 points in the fourth quarter, maybe 22 in the last 6 minutes, and just undid that series. And I think one of the parts about it being underrated is at least Iggy has said that was one of the times he decided he wanted to come to Golden State was because he was so impressed by Steph. And so, you know, if Steph doesn't go off, getting that that first national showing of his dominance, maybe Iggy doesn't come.
Well, you know, keep in mind, and I remember the look on Andre Iguodala's face when the confetti was falling after game 6 at Oracle Arena and the Warriors taking this. And what are we talking here, a 3-6 matchup? I mean, Denver had a really great regular season that year and benefited a lot in the regular season by that they'd consistently be the second half of a back-to-back that teams heading back east might be playing. You know, or so then they it was George Karl's final season. He was a coach of the year, if I'm remembering correctly. And Masai Ujiri was the general manager at that time. And it was a great upset. The upset that really then nearly happened was the next series. And NBA TV had been in this past hiatus between when the bubble in Orlando started and the season ended, replaying games. And they had one of them, that San Antonio series, game 2, I believe. Game 1 was that close one where Manu pulled it off with a shot right near the end. But that long drought for the Warriors in San Antonio snapped in the AT&T center there in San Antonio as Clay was just white hot. And I believe like Bazemore had a big bucket at the end of the game. But that 2013 time period, certainly special and formative for a lot of folks who then could see, well, hey, this is leading somewhere, and it led somewhere pretty fast, called a title in 2015. So great memories. Thank you for that, Rowan.
Yeah, thank you.
Be well. And David, look, let's wrap things up here on this edition. And maybe next time, I mean, as I'm thinking out loud here, we'll be talking about the draft, but maybe these are like Warriors talk on locker room as we go. Because we've got a bunch of topics that we can't talk about coming out of the different training camps. And we may reconfigure there a little bit because I feel like on this first show, it's been great to have so many different voices. And draft will certainly be a big part of it, but I'm kind of noticing you and I will do this again, maybe sooner than later. Maybe we're back at this next Wednesday. I don't know. But Kent will join us Monday. We may be calling these Warriors Talk on Locker Room. I'm thinking that that's more of like where the conversation starts going, because there are so many things that people want to be able to talk about. And again, some of what we are limited by in our ability to talk about draft prospects by name keeps us from kind of digging into how one utilizes a second pick in the draft by naming a draft prospect. So thank you all for listening to us and bearing with us with that constriction that we have on us for this inaugural show and the shows moving forward until the draft. After the draft, we'll be able to talk about anything and everything under the sun about the players in the draft and also the Warriors draft pick. But Warriors talk on Locker Room sounds good. But as you kind of reflect on the past couple of seasons, and I guess were you in school at the time where we were just talking about that 2013 run where the Warriors knocked off the Nuggets and then the Spurs? Could you see something coming with excitement building with the organization?
Definitely. I think my first big memory of the Warriors and being kind of my fandom and allegiance shifting slightly from the Bulls was when Harrison Barnes was picked. So that was hit the Harrison Draymond draft year. And you can kind of feel at that point that Steph was going to be, you know, a really big figure in the league. Klay had some good games to the end of that season. And then I just thought, because I know there was a lot around, are the Warriors going to keep that seventh pick? Because if it dropped below seven, obviously the Warriors, we would have had to move that pick and give it away because of the restrictions on that asset. But once the Warriors got that seventh pick and drafted Harrison Barnes, that was kind of the point where I went, okay, I really like Steph Curry. I really like Klay Thompson and this nucleus that they're building over there. And that's where I started watching a little more closely for sure.
Well, one last mention from the discussion board, and Stephen Cameron, who was concerned about the audio connection and not being able to actually join us earlier, did put a great Steph moment. And no one will forget these because, I mean, not only does he go off on the Orlando Magic, especially the games at the Amway Center are just, they're so memorable, really. I mean, the way that he just starts like hitting, what was like one game with like 12, 13 three-pointers in the game. Always does very well at the games in Florida, like most of the games in Miami and in Orlando, but especially the Magic games. Great stuff with Stephen Cameron remembering the – and you know what? You have to help me here, David. It's Stephen Cameron because now I see the name Stephen, and I have to pause and do the Stephen.
I do the same thing. That's funny.
So, but Steven here saying his favorite Steph moment the past 6 years and just the way that they have been able to take down the Magic and his contributions therein. And, oh boy, Lauren bringing in the conversation too of over under on Steph dunks once he returns. I think Andrew in the next question may be right.
Is that the bar?
Two would set a fair one. Well, it's set a fair. I mean, you know, he does get up. And you see, at the end of every practice, he does, you know, his 100 threes around the loop, working with Q, Bruce Frazier, and James Laughlin. And, you know, they get the spirit going with all the threes. Then he ends with free throws. And he always does get up for a dunk to cap everything off when it's at the facility.
For sure. So, he's got it. He's got it for sure. So I'm going to bring that up to him. The bar was set really low at two dunks, so I think he can get the over on that.
Listen, I can't thank everyone who joined us enough for taking the time to, one, listen to our maiden voyage here, the inaugural version of the Warrior shows on Locker Room. And a big thank you to Howard and Will Gottlieb, not just for joining the show, but for kind of the pre-prep for what we're going to do. I mean, Howard and I had an amazing conversation as we were kind of getting things going, what we're thinking we wanted to do and how we could organize this, because I do like having some of these conversations come in. And you know what? I'd like having the ability to, like we heard from Coach Kerr in an interview that he had done about the training camp, have that as a way to trigger some of the conversations and just a really fun way to discuss what has happened recently. David, let's do this again for sure, sooner than later. And thank you for taking so much time on this edition. And thank you to everybody who's been writing in our discussion board and who stepped up and joined us. And this was really, really cool. I'm Lawrence Scott with David Fotoki, who you can follow on Twitter and Instagram at dfotoki11. That's D-F-A-T-O-K-I, the number 11. I'm Lawrence Scott on Twitter and Instagram, L-A-U-R-E-N-C-E. For the whole crew, follow the Locker Room app as well on Twitter to be notified of the shows and the Warriors account at Warriors if you aren't doing that already. And we will do so much more of this as we move along. And let's get through this draft period with some of the limitations that we have on what we can say about prospects, which is nothing, and talk about the process, but also bring back some of these great memories, not just from this most recent training camp, but what the Warriors are doing moving forward and how the folks within the organization help make it all happen. Great call out, David, on mentioning Chloe and the work that she does, because Chloe, Nenea, Erichhausen, these are the folks that are the fabric of what we do. And big thanks to Raymond Ritter, our Vice President of Communications, for helping coordinate everything, as well as Jen Millay in marketing. And very special shout out to Karen Ramming, who has spearheaded how all of this will be projected as we go, and Zach Gayer on her crew. And we've got big things to come. I'm being kind of wordy about this, but it is a thing where we've kind of built up to this and we're excited about what we will do moving forward. But we had to start somewhere. And with David Fotoki, we say thank you so much for being part of our very first room here on Locker Room. Talk to you soon.